trying to tune in to the podcast with wise words, glasses on, ears open. Many things you learn from industry leaders and permobile experts. Welcome to the point of view of the wheelchair nerds. Extra, extra. You're listening to something great. I'm great. You finally arrived at the place.
Welcome to Wheelchair Nerds, a podcast to connect and inform people who utilize, prescribe, and provide seating and wheel mobility equipment. I'm your host, Angie Kiger. Before we jump into today's topic, a brief reminder that the information in this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not intended to be medical, billing, or legal advice. Now, let's get to it.
What's up, Wheelchair Nerds? This is your co-host, Hawken Miller. I am excited to introduce the guest for today's show, Sharon Sutherland. She is a 24-hour posture guru specialist, however you want to call it. She got her start in PT, wanting to become a sports physiotherapist, as they call it, back in Ireland, where she's from. And so she moved out to Toronto to pursue that, then ended up catching that bug for seating and posture and support. And since then has worked for industry and also is now consulting on her own. She has so much experience in this industry and is a wealth of knowledge. And we talk about all sorts of things. And so I don't want to spoil anything for you, but it is a great wide-ranging conversation. And I look forward to you guys listening to it. So let's jump right in.
All right, wheelchair nerds, welcome back. Another episode, another friend of mine that Hawken gets to meet. Hawken is learning slowly but surely that this world of complex rehab technology is very small. And today we have somebody who's actually calling in. We've phoned a friend from over in Ireland. I have known Sharon for a number of years. We were just reminiscing before we started recording. First time I met her was actually here in DC at a hospital I used to work at with another friend of mutual friend of ours named Jenny Payleg. And Sharon was working for Sunrise Medical at the time, and she was coming in with our local sales rep. And remember, I walked into the shared therapy gym, or I was walking down the hall, and I heard this very strong accent that this Southern American was like, where is this person? Who is this person that has come into our hospital? And lo and behold, it was my new Irish friend, Sharon. So before we jump too far into this, I know, Hawken, you usually do your research on folks. So what have you learned in some of your research about Sharon? Like, if you had to quickly introduce her, what would you say about her?
Yeah, Sharon is the 24/7 seating posture guru. She's been doing it, you know, first in the clinic in Toronto. Then she moved to kind of having her own consulting, then to working for a manufacturer, Jay Cushions in Colorado, then Sunrise. Well, Sunrise, I think, was combined with, I think Sunrise had just acquired Jay at that time. Then kind of starting your own practice and moving to consulting. So
yeah.
And, you know, starting off wanting to be a sports physiotherapist, moving to seating and positioning. So it was interesting to hear that story as well. So Sharon has been here, I feel like, since the beginning of, you know, seating and positioning, like back in the 80s, you know? So
I know I always tease you, Hawken, about be careful when we talk about age, because I was born in the 70s. So we'll be careful here. But Sharon, hopefully that introduction did you some justice. I when I reached out to you, I said I had a co-host and he's a very curious guy. He is a journalist by background. So you're going to get a lot of really good questions today. So first off, wonderful. For me, Sharon, for folks who've never met you, don't know who Sharon Sutherland is, if you were to meet somebody, a new therapist, what's your elevator pitch that you would give them? Who are you and what do you do?
Well, I am a physiotherapist, as we say in Ireland, or in North America, that would be a physical therapist. And I always say by trade, because I still am a licensed physiotherapist. But honestly, when I stepped into the role of seating, nothing in my world could have prepared me to think of that something existed that I knew nothing about in the world of physical therapy and in rehabilitation. And I suppose I have nothing but passion. I've been driven by passion my entire career. And whether it's, you know, teaching and sharing. I even don't like the word teaching anymore, because I probably do more sharing and mentoring and coaching than I do anything else. And for what rocks my world is having my hands on the clients that I have the privilege of working with, because in my world, in my opinion, my hands, as much as they're all becoming very arthritic and decrepit and less friendly for use, my hands tell me the whole story. So my ears and my hands are probably my best tools. And if anybody had any interest in the world of 24-hour postgraduate care, oh my goodness, you're stepping into a world you'll never leave. I've convinced my daughter, and she does it a little bit. So yeah, that's me in a nutshell. And I moved back home to Ireland 8 years ago, having been, I suppose you could say, in the North American world between Canada and between Toronto, Ontario, and Colorado for 32 years. So when I arrived back home 8 years ago, let me tell you that nobody could believe that I was actually here, and that I was staying, because I had been coming back and forth all my life. But I left with two suitcases and came home with three. So I'd say that was an incredible change.
Exactly. Well, you came home with but you had two girls by that point. You know, had your two daughters. So
yes, another daughter was born in Toronto.
Yeah.
And my youngest daughter was born in Colorado. And then I reared them on my own from when the youngest was about two. And then I had the pleasure of working in the Ability Show, which I did most years in New York, and was flying home early because of a problem that one of my daughters had, and was getting went to the airport a day early and got on the first flight they could put me on, and met my current husband, I always say that. And then convinced him to move to Ireland with me. And he's still here. And that's the most wonderful thing.
There you go. I will say, having not spoken to you since you moved back to Ireland, as most people will say, your accents get stronger. Your accent is definitely more prominent. So I'm sure all of your friends, when you came back to Ireland, were saying, oh, your accent's gone. But I can tell you, for someone who knew you when you lived over here for numerous years, your accent is definitely stronger. You're back home, and it's obvious.
I see a big sign sometimes over my own head, and that sign says, where do I belong? Because when I was in Canada, people said, oh, you're so Irish, we can't understand you. And then I worked really hard on slowing down my cadence of speech and, you know, trying to emphasize words that were kind of foreign to me, but they were still all English. And then, you know, then to the States, and people said the same thing. And I remember way back, some of the sales teams used to sit in the back of the room with placards, and then, you know, they were teasing me, and they'd say, when she says this, this is what she means. And then when I moved back home, everybody in Ireland, in the small town that I live in here in the northwest of Ireland, and they all said, oh, you're so American. And I thought, God, who am I? Irish by born and bred. That's all I can tell you.
There you go. And you will never lose that. That is for sure. So I think I'm going to let Hawken ask the first few questions, which is uncanny for me. I can really out of character. Normally I just start talking when I'm reuniting with old seating and positioning friends, but I know Hawken, you're a naturally curious guy, and I think Sharon will find it very interesting too. Sharon, one of the reasons I invited Hawken to be a co-host this year was because he can provide such unique perspective and unique questions to ask a therapist as someone who uses a wheelchair and uses cushions and, you know, all the stuff for CRT. So I love to always hear where his brain goes and what he's curious about. So go for it, Hawk. Ask Sharon a few questions.
Well, yeah. Thanks again, Sharon, for joining us. I'm already excited about where this conversation is going to go. And, you know, we're just talking about, like, kind of who am I? You've been in a lot of different places, a lot of different, you know, careers. Something I didn't mention in my little intro is that you also worked on the payer side too in Canada. And so, you know, that's an interesting perspective as well. But, you know, the first thing I wanted to know is, you know, you had your mindset on sports physiotherapy, right? And orthopedics. And I wanted to hear kind of your story and your perspective on why you decided to move into seating and positioning.
Thank you. It was very simple, Håkan. One day in the sports clinic in Toronto, a young man rolled to the clinic, and it wasn't a very accessible clinic. And he wanted his wheelchair adjusted for performance. I had absolutely no clue, as in zero, not even, I mean, I knew the words, but I didn't know anything about wheelchair technology other than, you know, what it looked like. I didn't know anything about biomechanics. I didn't know effective wheelchair skills. I didn't know the impact of positioning on performance and function and participation. So I was truly at my wit's end. So, but I was very honest, and I told this young man that I had no clue. But I told him I was going to find out. And I remember at the time, and a lot of people who might be listening to this won't even know what I'm talking about, but the Yellow Pages. And for those of you who don't know, very quickly, it's a very fat telephone book.
And well, I know.
Yeah.
I know. Very familiar.
I looked up, only just familiar, though. I looked up, you know, wheelchairs, anything that I could find related. And that was the beginning of my 34 plus years career in 24-hour posture care. I just made it a mission to learn. I couldn't believe there was this gap in my knowledge. And then I phoned therapists, and really the gap was there too. And where I got my most knowledge from was actually from the wheelchair users, as well as from the manufacturers and the suppliers of technology. And as a clinician, it was, I didn't know enough to even be embarrassed. I didn't know that I should know. I didn't know anything. So everything was new. And I never looked back. And very, very gradually, I shifted gears. I was in Ontario at the time. And went into private practice, eventually was doing in Ontario. They have authorizers, or they had then, wheelchair and seating authorizers. So I became an authorizer. I was very busy because I really, this was my thing. And I got audited a few times. And as a consequence, I got offered an opportunity to work with the Ministry of Health, with the Assistive Devices Program, and first as a consultant, and then I managed the wheelchair seating mobility device category for about probably 4 or 5 years before I moved down to Colorado. So, that was how I landed myself into it.
Wow. No, obviously your career has taken you a lot of places, and, you know, working with the Ministry of Health, I'm curious, you know, you're always trying to learn new things. I'm sure you learned a lot in that role. Is there something that really stuck with you that you kind of took as you furthered your career?
Yes. When I look back, as I often do, and I think to myself, what did I get out of it? Because to me, everything is an opportunity to learn more, to make you better for your next stop, wherever your next stop may be. And I remember at the time, what I got out of it very definitely was two very strong things. One was that it's important to understand the payer knowledge, the payer side of things, and the recognition that many payers truly know nothing, and I don't mean this rudely, but truly know nothing about the human form. They don't know really anything about the hands-on or the decision-making processes. What they know is policy. And I realized as a clinician in that role, putting on that hat, I had to learn the policy. And it taught me in life to always have a respect and appreciation for whomever that payer may be and their policies. So that was one. And two, what I learned was that putting rules into place for therapists about prescription and assessment without first recognizing that therapists don't have that skill set, and affording them the possibility to get that skill set, I realized that it was, you know, it was just going to constantly be a broken wheel. So mm-hmm. I started at the time, in the limited capacity that I had, doing presentations on how to be an authorizer, you know, how to understand policy, how to respect, you know, the person who needs the equipment and the person who's paying for the equipment. And even every bit as importantly is how to remain true to oneself and not allow reimbursement stifle thoughts or concepts or principles that you have. In other words, just because the policy doesn't support that the end user or the wheelchair user or the person using the stander or whatever seating system, just because the policy doesn't cover what the person needs, does not mean that the person doesn't need it. So there mm-hmm. were the two biggest takeaways that I got, and that was so long ago, I can't even believe that I remembered them in that order, because that really is what I would tell anybody going back in the years as well. So mm-hmm. it's amazing that Håkon, that you got that out of me.
Yeah, no, and you know, one more question before I throw it back to Angie. That's something you mentioned a lot in your story that I read on your website, is staying true to oneself. And so what does that mean for you? Like, what is being true to yourself?
Oh, well, in the world of reimbursement, I think I just mentioned, you know, to be true to me as a clinician and be true to my commitment to the human I'm working with. So that's one. The other piece of being true to myself that probably drove me to write some of that was when you, and Angie will appreciate this, when you work with industry, when you work with a corporate structure, when therefore your name becomes associated, whether you like it or not, your name becomes associated with the goods being provided by that manufacturer or supplier. I think that's very good. I mean, I think that makes sense. I think where I have watched people lose their soul is where they get so caught up with that as being the most optimal solution, and they don't learn all of the other solutions that are out there. So my philosophy in life has always been, if I'm going to talk about product A, I better know what product B, C, D, and E from anybody out there are about. And if I don't know, I need to go find out. So that's probably absolutely the most important true to myself pieces.
Yeah. Amen on both of those. It reminds me of one time I was teaching down in North Carolina, and I was in a U-shaped room, Sharon, standing at the front. I'm sure you could picture those conference rooms from your yesteryear when you were doing that over here in the U.S. And I remember that a therapist who was sitting in between the two suppliers that she came with raised her hand, and she said something along the lines of, "Well, I'd like to recommend Elevate when I do my reports, but my, you know, these gentlemen I work with tell me that I can't because it's not paid for." And we were about ready to take a break, and I could see there was another physical therapist up towards the front, just was about ready to jump out of her seat when this, you know, one therapist said that. And I said, "Let's take a break, guys, and we'll come back." And so during the break, the therapist closer to the front came over to me, and she said, "Angie, when we get back from break, can I talk?" I'm like, "Of course." And I said, "I think I know what you're going to want to talk about." She said, "Yes." She's like, "I want that physical therapist to understand it is her ethics. It is her license that's on the line. If she believes it's medically or clinically necessary, she needs to write that in the evaluation, talk about that." And so we had a very interesting discussion, and I was glad that somebody else brought it up, because I was trying to figure out before she came to me, like, how am I going to say this tactfully without upsetting somebody that, you know, technically I was working for a manufacturer that would be considered a customer to me. And that was one of the things that I remember somebody compared me to you, Sharon, and how you did that with clinical education. They're like, "You remind me of Sharon Pratt." Sorry to your husband, but that's how you were known for so many years over here. and I was like, "Why?" And they said, "Well, because even though you were working for X brand, you always speak your mind." I'm like, "Exactly." I said, "Because at the end of the day, I am people first, and I have to be. If not," and you know, that's been, you know, with in the two roles I've had at two different manufacturers, I've always insisted on that. And, you know, I can speak for both of those positions I was in. They supported, you know, they supported that. Permeal supports that all the time, right? Like, and that's one of the reasons when we created this podcast is that I was adamant. I'm like, this is not going to be a Permeal commercial. The whole vision of this podcast is to bring people who use equipment like Hawken to people who prescribe it, like the physical therapist, the occupational therapist, to people who provide it, bring everybody together to show the unique pieces that happen in the evaluation process. And I'm so passionate about that. So it was a very big compliment many years ago when somebody said that to me. I'm like, well, good. I'm glad. Like, I'll take that compliment. I'll be like Sharon Pratt. My accent's just a little different, but you know, I can handle it.
Thank you for sharing that. I'm also, I've done a lot of rep training in my day. And but on the supplier end of things, as well as on the manufacturer end. And I still hear myself. Now, I always said to the reps, you've got to know your product excellently, but you've also got to know the competition, because every product has some value. And I think it's very foolish to stand up there and say, well, this is the best thing since sliced bread, and then not know your competition. So I'm a very big believer in quality training and being open to all possibilities.
Absolutely. So what would you tell Sharon Pratt, looking back, if Sharon Pratt was one of your mentees back when you were first starting out, what would you tell that? What would Sharon Sutherland today tell that young Sharon in Toronto about, you know, what sort of advice would you have given her when it came to being presented with somebody needing a wheelchair or somebody needing to be more efficient in a wheelchair? What would you have said?
Well, I wish I'd known then that alignment does not equate symmetry. I wish I'd known then that anatomy doesn't lie. I can thank my daughter for those words, because she drives it into me. And also that the body always wins. So I wish I'd known those things. I also wish I'd known how to do a full, thorough, hands-on evaluation with confidence and with repeatable confidence. So I should be able to look at that person now and in 10 minutes and in a half an hour and put my hands in the same places and get the same results. And it's not always easy. I think that I've created something for myself, and you probably read about it, Hawken, the life box. And it's a very simple thing, and it's just a visual imagery between your ribs and your pelvis. I wish I had known that. I wish I could have taught myself that, 30 years ago. And I think there's the other piece of the puzzle that I was probably missing for the first, maybe even the first 15 years of my career, was I was missing the piece that the way we sleep is very definitely reflected in the way we sit, stand, function, whether we're wheel mobility users or not. Even for myself, I've realized this. And I wish I had known that little nugget of information and put the twos and twos together, much earlier in my career. But they're probably the biggest things that I wish that I could have taught myself back in the day. And probably now when I'm doing mentoring and out in the field doing hands-on work, mostly coaching and mentoring, other than some clients, just I get to see the people who are the most complex. And I don't mean that tapping myself on the back. I mean that with sincerity of, I wish I could get to see some clients in this day, at this point in my life, that didn't have such complex needs. But it's those elements that I just shared with you, those points that I just shared with you, that take the complexity out of most things. Because once you have a structured way of looking at the human form and you understand that the kinetic chain, it makes things so much more obvious. It doesn't necessarily give you the answers you want, but it gives you the facts, so we're not reacting to symptoms. And I think that's probably a really good end summary of the things I would have liked to have taught myself, was all of those points that I give you take me to the facts of with every client that I have the privilege of having my hands on. And with the facts, I can have a logical conversation. This is compensatory posture. This is structural. This is structural. These are things that we need to address. And here will be the consequences if we do and if we don't. And I think having that very open conversation with the clients I serve, as well as with the clinicians and everybody else in the big picture of the team, I think that's been very, very helpful to me, I suppose, teaching myself.
Absolutely. And, you know, what's funny is that you talk about, like, even people who don't use wheelchairs, how 24-hour positioning is important. So somewhere before COVID, so it's 2018, 2019, I was up in an event in Toronto, ironically enough. And I remember I woke up and I've never thrown out my back, but I was like, oh, my back, something was off. And so I texted one of my good friends who's a pediatric physical therapist still down at the hospital I used to work at. And I was like, Shannon, I need to find a physical therapist that understands a low tone baby all grown up. And what I mean by that is because I present, and I remember Jenny has said to me many times, like, I wish someone would have done a longitudinal study on you, because my sister and I both have low tone of unknown etiology, and her girls had it too. We called it out. It's definitely genetic. Her girls were late walkers. One of them had to have AFOs. But what has happened, as you might imagine, Sharon, is my entire life I've compensated in ways that are just not right. And I've learned various things from, I have certain patterns that aren't even mapped. Like when my physical therapist works with me, she'll say, for tell me to do something, I'm like, I'm trying. She's like, okay, hold on. This is not mapped yet. And it's just so fascinating. And then sometimes like I'll go, I'm like, oh, my neck is really bothering me. She's like, all right, well, how are you sleeping now? Like, you know, she'll like really think about like how is that impacting my day, and just how the different things that I do, you just compensate over time. And it's, you know, it's not great, but Håkan, putting you on the spot here a little bit, do you think about 24-hour positioning when you go to bed at night, like about how your body is positioned?
I will now, but not really. I kind of, you know, you don't think about that. And that's something, Sharon, when I was reading your story, that really stood out to me is the sleep part, because I don't think people think about that. Like with Duchenne, especially, there's a, because of the muscle weakness, there's this tendency to like kind of go into that fetal position. And, you know, obviously you're sleeping almost half of the time that you're living, right? So I see a lot of people, you know, with my condition, like they start to close in on themselves, you know, because they're not being positioned properly when they're sleeping. And so I don't think about it, but it's something worth thinking about now.
I strongly recommend it.
Are there any resources? We do have end users that listen to this podcast, Sharon. So not just the therapist, are there any resources that you can think of, or websites, even if it's a clinical website, that you'd recommend, like Håkan sharing with his community of folks with Duchenne or just other diagnoses that are out there?
Oh, I don't know on the top of my head relative to diagnoses. However, you know, there's the whole, well, you're very familiar with this. You may have even been part of it. I don't know. But the 24-hour positioning paper that's in ResNet, just got published in the last year or so. And Tamara Kittleson, and there's a large group of people who are very involved with that. I often will send clients of mine and their families, because I see a lot of children and teenagers. And to me, the family, the care team also need to be very aware of all these things. And I often send them to the website of Simple Stuff Works. And when I say this, I want to make sure that I'm very clear. And I say this also to my families. I say to them, this is not about product. Yes, they have product solutions, and they're, you know, they've got very nice product solutions, but that's not my point. In terms of resource, they have an absolutely incredible bank of resources, very directly related to body shape distortion, what happens when we have symmetry, what happens when we don't, and how to look at that in a very simplistic but very objective and measured way. And it's very tied into the Goldsmith Indices of Measure, which has been around for so long. We just lost John Goldsmith in the last few months. But I recall in the 70s and in the 80s, I remember listening to John and his lovely wife, Liz, speak about 24-hour and sleep position. And their influence in the world has been just humongous. Mm-hmm. And they have on their website a lot of links, which is the piece that I'm referring to really great resources, to all sorts of resources related to early mortality, related to the absence of 24-hour positioning, of lawsuits and how human rights have changed in the UK, because our body shape protection is a human right. Mm-hmm. And they've been very, very influential, as well as a great resource for clinicians and families across the globe. So off the top of my head. And then I also, of course, follow Ginny on her Facebook page, mm-hmm. Evidence-Based Pediatric Practice. And whenever there's linkages to research mm-hmm. or anything related to 24-hour postural care, I find that's what I do every night. I read a research paper every night if I can. And mm-hmm. keeps me on my edge.
Yes. Well, that's what I wish we could. So my passion for end user education just continues to get stronger and stronger and stronger, because I feel like a lot of times clinicians, you know, we understand things or, you know, we learn things, we get the research, but there's so much to manage in everyday care of either your child, your spouse, yourself. It's like, how can I think about every little thing? I mean, on a very, very small scale, I think about every time I still see Beth, my physical therapist. She calls me whack-a-mole Sharon. She's like, you really define what chronic PT is needed. She's like, there's always something popping up with you. And she'll say, okay, well this, you know, okay, I need you to add this, this, and that to your home program. I'm like, Beth, at this point, you've got me doing a home program for 3 hours every day. Like, this is impossible. Like, tell me what are the exercises that are really needed. And I can't even imagine, you know, what goes into, you know, planning your day, much less, you know, I'm very small scale on the in terms of what would be needed for me. But, you know, when I think about the folks that I encounter, friends of mine that are in wheelchairs, I'm sure the same with you, Sharon. Do you ever have a random situation where you ask somebody, hey, and they're like, oh yeah, I'm going to get a new wheelchair. And you say, hey, when was the last time a therapist had their hands on you in a non-creepy but professional way? So many times I have people say, oh, but I know what I want, so I just tell my provider and they'll just get it for me. And I just find myself beating that drum of please go see a clinician.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. It has been a common statement that I've heard. And what keeps me awake at night is the fact that that's still a fact, mm-hmm. if you get me. And, you know, I think that we're a wheelchair user has experience and knows from past experience what has worked for them and, more importantly, what has not worked for them. Mm-hmm. I think it's critical that clinicians listen, because sometimes I think that's a fact that doesn't happen. And I think mm-hmm. you give me good reason. One of the most common reasons is when you ask clinicians about that, they'll tell you, well, there's no time. You know, we have 45 minutes or whatever we have. It's different in different countries. And we have to get X, Y, and Z done. And mm-hmm. that's a problem. But I'll tell you where I find it very stressful. I find it very stressful when I see children or teenagers who have now got quite evident body shape distortion. And they're living a very functional and full life and trying to. And I will hear the comment so often, it makes me cry. And the comment is, Sharon, I don't think we've ever had somebody do this before. Mm-hmm. And by doing this, I mean have them in their chair and then out of their chair and do a full assessment. Mm-hmm. It horrifies me that mm-hmm. is still a very frequent statement that comes to my ears, and I'm very sensitive to it because it horrifies me.
Same. I hear the same thing. Hawken, once again, putting you on the spot. I mean, do you hear this a lot in the communities of people with disabilities that you interact with, as far as maybe some hesitation or maybe just lack of clinicians that are trained, that are available to people to get these evaluations done? I don't know.
From my experience, it's been pretty good in the Duchenne space. we're getting on the mat, and you know, people are kind of manipulating us and just seeing kind of where we're at in terms of what our needs are. But I think for every diagnosis, there's this, you know, perspective that, you know, I think maybe, you know, as a patient, you're like, oh, I know exactly what I need, but maybe you don't, because you need someone like an unbiased clinician observer to see how you're sitting. Because my mom, it's so funny. She always gets after me. She's like, stop leaning forward so much. You're, you know, your head's too far forward. And, you know, sometimes you don't realize what you're doing until someone else tells you what to do. So I think, you know, that's the biggest thing, that the theme that I'm getting, you know, from this conversation is to really to have that hands-on approach and to have a better understanding of what you need, that maybe you have some blind spots that you're seeing.
Yeah.
That a MAT evaluation can help overcome.
I wish. Go ahead, Sharon.
I think that, Hakan, you touched on it there, and I think that it's a very important point, and that is that as much as we think this has been taught in the undergraduate programs, it's really not. Mm-hmm. There may be some programs that have a little bit more of the in-depth hands-on assessment skills than others, but in general, mm-hmm. it is not happening, and people are coming out the other end, and they are placed in, I see it happening here in Ireland all the time, they're placed in positions in pediatrics or in adults, you know, who knows where, and they're faced with what I remember the block wall facing me 30 some years ago was with the feeling of, oh my goodness, I don't know how to do this. Mm-hmm. And then you immediately look to the supplier. And we're mm-hmm. lucky in the clinical society, I think we're very lucky that we have the privilege of working alongside some really excellent suppliers and assistive technology providers. Mm-hmm. But I think that there's a risk, and that's something that I've seen throughout my career. And the risk is that we become a product-centric piece of mm-hmm. the puzzle, but we become product-centric as opposed to human-centric. Mm-hmm. And I give you a little example of that, and I know you'll get me straight away. You see somebody, let's pretend, Hakan, exactly what you said. Your mother mentions that you collapse forward, and she might mention that your head's forward, right? And they might seem like such simple things. And if I was somebody looking at you just from a product standpoint, I would be reaming off, you know, product concepts that made sense. But what I would want to do instead, if I was practicing what I preach, which I'm such a believer in, that would be A, to listen to you. Why do you think you're doing it? And then B, let's get you on the mat and look at you specific to your seated position in terms of your kinetic chain, because I want to know the cause. Is it habitual? You know, is it your environment? Or is there a structural limitation someplace in your body that's causing that we can address? So that's what I mean when I say there's a little risk in when clinicians come out and they're not feeling competent or confident. There's nothing worse. Mm-hmm. We've all been there as a clinician that doesn't feel competent or confident, because the last mm-hmm. thing you want to do is, in my opinion, is your client to think you don't know what you're talking about. And in mm-hmm. all likelihood, we don't know what we're talking about because we've never been taught. So there's a tendency to not necessarily own that lack of knowledge, but instead to lean on somebody who's in the room that does have it better mm-hmm. than you. And then I think the consequences are a product-centric approach to solutions, which I would not necessarily always agree with.
Yeah, totally agree on that one. Just really quick, Hakan, as a follow-up before I lose my thought, my diagnosed ADHD, we never know where I'm going. But, you know, I think about that a lot, Sharon, when it comes to also the therapists, some of the therapists I've come across, and I remember another thing that I've had younger therapists say to me is that some of the folks who've been doing this for a long time, who are seasoned in the world of seating and positioning, they can come across as very arrogant. and tell their clients exactly what to do. And that I would also caution younger therapists and more seasoned therapists to say, I always tell people, humble yourself and listen and feel and watch. You know, I worked with a lot of kids, you know, I worked at HSC, Sharon, with Jenny for a number of years, and majority of my kiddos were nonverbal. And so I really had to watch and really pay attention to breathing patterns. I had to pay attention to eye movements. Most of the kiddos that I worked with had cerebral palsy, so they also had CVI mixed in there too. And so, you know, there could have been a reason. And one of the things, one of the stories that I would tell is that I remember we had a kid, or a young man, I should say, at HSC who had sustained a brain injury. And the nurses were just getting upset because over the weekend, he was always tweaking his headrest. He's banging his, you know, all the stuff. And so I remember we figured out, the therapist figured out very quickly. We're like, well, wait a minute. When you position him in front of the TV, how are you positioning him? And they're like, well, we're rolling him into the teen lounge and putting him in front of the TV or setting. And I was like, dead on, right? And we're like, well, he actually has difficulty seeing dead on because of his brain injury. And he's got, and it's in the chart that his peripheral vision is a bit better. So if you just turn him a little bit. And I mean, this is a poor guy who's nonverbal. He's hanging out in a pediatric hospital all weekend. He just wants to watch BET, you know, for the love, like let the man watch whatever he wants to watch on TV. And when that little tweak of like, you know, making nursing aware of, hey, make sure you, or like putting a sign, make sure you, you know, turn me in this position. We saw a dramatic drop in the number of times that his headrest needed to go back and be adjusted. The hardware was being messed up. It's just paying attention to those little things.
100%.
Yeah, it's the little things. And, you know, Sharon, you've kind of taken on more of like a mentor role for a lot of these younger therapists, up and coming therapists. I guess, you know, how are you teaching them and educating them about how to build confidence on these MAT evaluations, you know, skills, you know, that maybe aren't being covered in the traditional educational sense? Like, what are you really trying, or I guess, how are you teaching them, you know, to be more informed, to understand the client better, to, you know, figure out what works best for them?
Yeah. So I've learned over time that it works best in listening to feedback. And my daughter would be a big advocate for this as well. And that is that when you're out there doing a presentation and you're teaching therapists, if somebody's watching you do the actions, they're not learning. They're getting their CVUs and they're getting their signature and they're leaving and going home. But tomorrow morning, if you were to watch them in clinic, they still don't get it. So what I've learned is that theory is very important. So I share the theory in one bucket. And then when they have the language, because language is a big important thing as well, we have international standardized language that very few people actually use. So I'm a big advocate for language. So I always teach people the correct language and then the visual language. And then it's a deep dive of doing the hands-on on each other for 2 to 3 straight days, as in 100% hands-on, no PowerPoint, no didactic stuff. It's all hands-on. And as Jen introduced into our program is, she will actually have people rotate so they feel each body in the room. Everybody gets hands on everybody, because everybody in the room has a different body structure, has different, everybody will have some element of limitation, whether they're wheeled mobility users or not. So how do I teach it is very much by having them do it. I even have their hands on my hand. And I'd say, or my hand over theirs, and I'd say, no, I want you to feel this. And it's the only way that I have been able to, with confidence, get the message across where I feel as though there's hope of reproduction of that message a week, 2 weeks, a month, and onwards down the road. And that's absolutely the best way I can describe it. We're very lucky in Ireland in that we have a postgraduate certification program for clinicians. Now, in Ireland, it's OTs who do most of the seating. I'm an odd duck because I'm a physio. So my daughter and I are like the odd ducks in the lake. But that it doesn't matter as long as it gets done. And so there's a wonderful postgraduate certification course in the University of Limerick that was spearheaded originally by Dr. Rosie Gowron, and now it is spearheaded by Dr. Emma Smith, who you probably know. And so Jen and I have been teaching the seating, 24-hour postural piece of it, it with emphasis on the seating. And Jen was also doing the wheelchair skills. And what was amazing was this was postgraduate. And yet the conversations, when it came to the hands-on, were almost the same as they were for the newer graduated therapists. In other words, it didn't matter how long clinicians had been graduated for. They had more awareness of need and more awareness of the fact that they weren't feeling like they were feeling the need, but they still didn't have the hands-on skills. So even at a postgraduate level, we find ourselves having the best success with that deep dive of doing the hands-on on each other first before we even introduce the client.
Which makes me think about, I know this is a controversial thing that I will say on the podcast, and I'm okay with it, and we can definitely leave it in and not take it out, Hawk, but I very much struggled during COVID, Sharon, and still do when I look at some of the legislation that's out there when it comes to telehealth wheelchair evaluations. I struggle with that a great deal just because I agree with you. There are certain things that the therapist who has a deep, deep understanding needs to physically have their hands on the client. And there are certain things that the provider needs to have their hands on the client and be in person for, to take specific measurements, to do a feature match. And so I do my best to encourage people, you know, friends are like, oh, I can get a telehealth event. I'm like, try to go into a clinic if at all humanly possible. That I think is key.
And during the COVID, Hawkins, you probably realized from reading all the blogs and everything, they were all under duress, just so you know. Because I had all of a sudden two daughters, and we live in a very small little traditional Irish cottage. And all of a sudden, everybody's here. And mom was panicking because, all of, you know, everything stopped on March 5th, 2020. The world came to a standstill. And here in Europe, we had a 2 kilometer radius of ability to be mobile. So we had to get creative, and Jen was truly my rock because she forced me, really, is a good way to put it, or strongly suggested that I start to do, you know, blogs and become familiar with technology, because I'm not, it's not my thing. But what's been interesting is that since the pandemic has been over in this, you know, is it ever over? But you know what I mean. We still offer virtual and in person. For training and for hands-on. It's not always, I have very strict rules. So if I'm going to do a telehealth virtual consult with somebody, I need a therapist on the ground with the person who is being assessed, a therapist who has gone through, who has had me for an hour beforehand and understands the correct language, understands what I mean when I say put the hands on the trochanter. I don't mean on the ischial, I mean the trochanter. So it is possible, but to your point, it's only possible with strength on the ground and somebody knowledgeable on the ground with the person. It's tricky. Because it has become a way of being since the pandemic, so it's tricky,
right? And there are, and like I said, it's controversial because for me, I don't believe it's a blanket statement. I'm very, you know, very black and white in some areas, but in other areas I'm very gray. And this is an area that it's gray. And I think one of the ones, I think honestly, you know how you have a memory of a certain situation, and I won't give too many details because I'm not sure if the therapist listens to this and. But I remember distinctly riding and being at a office of a provider. Someone came in for an evaluation, someone who had never had a standing wheelchair, and the therapist was remote, and there was not a therapist because I was not, you know, I'm not licensed to do this. Like in, you know, in the state of Virginia, like I'm not, that's not my, my thing. Like, I wouldn't be appropriate to do it. And this individual was leaning on the provider to do a lot of this. And I actually encouraged our local rep to step out. And then I eventually, because I knew the therapist, actually grabbed the phone at one point without the patient being able to hear me. And I looked at her, I was like, you need to see this person in person. You need to. And that's just how I left it. And I was like, reach out to me with questions. You need to see this person. And that was for me, that's where my alarm bells really started going off, right? To be like, hold on, like, this person's never been standing before. And if I went through the whole laundry list of other things this client had, Sharon, I mean, you would be like, oh my gosh. And
there were a lot of red flags.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's where it comes back to, like, everyone needs to humble themselves and to be, and you know, and remember that education, talking, communication plays such a huge role in the process, right? And being okay with saying, hey, I can't get all the information in this first appointment. I'm going to need to see you again. And that's okay. And figure it out, because, you know, at the end of the day, you want your clients to be in the best equipment to be as safe as possible. And I think that we take for granted education that I think that OTs and PTs have. And I Hawken was on vacation last week, so I haven't had a chance to tell him, but I had two embarrassing moments last week, Sharon, with two former HSC friends of mine. Well, they're still friends of mine, two therapists. One of them I see almost every week. She's a best friend of mine. She never did seating and positioning. She's an OT that focused on feeding management, but she works in early intervention now. And I'm working along, enjoying my day, and I get a text from her that says, do you know anything about the Explorer Mini? And I responded with, do you know where I work? And I was like, yes, it's a ProMeal product. Why? Oh, I want to learn more about it. I'm like, oh my gosh. And so then, like, that evening or the evening before that, I had another OT friend of mine who works in a school system now reach out to me and say, you have a podcast? Yes. And she's like, I've been wanting to learn all this information. I had no idea that it's out there. I'm like, Camille, it's all over my LinkedIn. And she's like, I'm so excited because I find kids in the school system. And, you know, both Amanda and Camille said, you know, now that we're not working at the hospital, and they haven't been in the hospital for a number of years, we don't have this ability or this, you know, ease of in-services or meeting with different therapists. And they're like, and there's so many clinicians, and these are people that are in my personal circle. And I'm like, you know, I have failed you. But it just shows that, you know, we're screaming from the mountaintops, like, how can we get these resources in clinicians' hands, and people who use the equipment, and in the provider's hands. So thus Wheelchair Nerds was born, Sharon.
I know, I love the name. And I'm probably more of a, you know, 24-hour positioning nerd than a wheelchair mm-hmm. nerd, but they all go together. But you know what I mean mm-hmm. when I say that.
Absolutely.
So I just want to ask you a few kind of wrap-up questions, Sharon. You know, in your time of working, you know, physical therapy and 24-hour positioning, what's one piece of complex rehab technology that you think is underrated or misunderstood?
Well, you know, I think the thing that I see most being misunderstood, and I don't know if it's underrated, but definitely misunderstood, and you can have a love-hate relationship with it, is custom molded seating. A lot of people are afraid of it. A lot of people don't have a clue really what it means. It sounds awful to some people, and it sounds idyllic to others. And unfortunately, I'm faced with working with a lot of individuals who would be in molded seating with very complex body shape distortion. And I wish that it was something that was more well understood, with the pros and the cons clearly highlighted. And that's not necessarily an answer direct to your question, but it's probably the best one for me, given the clients that I see in the last, let's say, 10, 15 years of my life.
In fact, I have custom molded seating that I'm sitting in at this very moment. So, and what I can say is that especially for the lateral support, it's been really helpful to prevent, you know, any scoliosis from occurring, you know, trying to catch it early. Something that you know, mentioned, like the sleep and, you know, pediatrics too, like that early intervention, you know, to proactively prevent stuff from happening.
Yeah, because a lot of very active users, children in particular, their families would be very scared that the thought of molded ceiling, it's like the end, you know, it's like, oh, this is as bad as it gets, kind of, sort of. And whereas in my opinion, it doesn't have to be at all. And I think there's a lot of misconception about the idea that it takes away function. If it's done well and with a good, and again, the key element being a very good hands-on assessment, getting you to it, I think it can enable function. So I think that it's one area there's so many solutions in terms of cushions and back supports, and there's some lovely ones, but there's a lot of me too kind of things. You kind of look, if you put them all in a room and they all have the same color cover on it, you know, without actually, I'm a big believer, you rip it right down and you get to the nitty gritty, what's under the hood, what's under the cover, and the next cover, and the next cover, and why are all these covers there? I think that there hasn't been a huge amount of real excitement in the world of cushions and back supports. You have the measuring device now for the air with Kalogan. I never get their name right. And in Florida, I thought that was, a lot of clinicians were very excited about that. I think that in terms of innovation, now we have 3D printed molded seating, which I think has got huge potential. And I think it's very exciting. And I'm glad that I've been able to stay with my career long enough to see that a reality in the field. I think that's when you ask the question, that's what comes to my mind. Mm-hmm. I remember being very excited in the middle of my career, thinking, something that's not a me too was dynamic seating. And I'm still a very big, I'm still a very big believer in dynamic componentry, not vomiting dynamic all over every element, every joint in the body, because that's what I probably first did, is I was so excited. I just wanted everything to be dynamic, you know, head, shoulders, hips, knees, feet. And then I realized, oh no, Sharon, that's not a good approach. Baby steps, one joint at a time. But I am a big advocate for dynamic solutions when we're dealing with dynamic bodies. Because a lot of challenges happen when we have static solutions with dynamic presentations.
Yeah. I'm going to skip ahead a little bit to the most important question, I think. What makes you a wheelchair nerd?
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, I really do believe it's just constant learning, constant excitement. And like I said, you know, I'm probably more of the positioning nerd, which is not nearly as exciting as the wheelchair nerd. I know that because I get that. I mean, when I see the technology and the way things have moved along, it's very exciting. But for me, it's just constantly being able to learn and constantly what makes me feel like a nerd about it. And I really am. I mean, I sleep, breathe, and eat 24-hour positioning. And what rocks my world is the difference it makes. And it's palpable, it's visual, and it's incredible. And I never will stop loving that.
Love it. Love it. Well, Sharon, we're going to wrap up recording the podcast now. We'll hang out for a couple of minutes and talk after we end the recording. But maybe, just maybe, we can convince your offspring, your daughter, maybe we can come up with a way to have her on the podcast too, because I would love to hear about all of the stuff that she has brought you. And it kind of inspires me. Like I say, I always tease Hawken about, you know, he teaches me so much from a younger perspective of the technology. I would love to hear from her standpoint too, if Jen would be interested. We maybe would have her on an episode too. So. Well, guys.
Yeah, Jen's a very busy young lady.
Yeah,
because she has her own practice in physio, and she also does yoga, and then she also does 24-hour postural care. So it's a bit. She at oh, and if any of you happen to be coming to Ireland in September, she runs a wellness festival.
Oh, really?
Wild and Well Festival. Yeah, so she's a very busy.
And follow her on socials.
Yeah, you should check it out, the Wild and Well Festival. My daughter does the photography and videography, and my Jen does the facilitation and the creation. Yeah, so it's quite fun. So, but I will mention it to her.
Yeah, it's awesome. Well, thank you so much for being a part of this, Sharon. We will definitely share all of your links, because I know even I can imagine some folks who use wheelchairs that listen to this are going to want some of the links that you mentioned. And so we'll be sure to put that up in our show notes, as we call them, so people can access this and follow Sharon on socials and, you know, learn all about the really cool things that they're doing. And I think my favorite part about this is just really reminding folks that globally, that global perspective provides so much. And, you know, there's so many things that are very similar, similar messages throughout the world that happen within seating and positioning and mobility. So thanks so much, guys.
Thank you so much for having me. Yes. And when you mentioned the world, I've been so lucky to work in so many different places around the globe and learn from clinicians in so many different places. It's been phenomenal.
Awesome.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Hawken. It was a pleasure to meet you and lovely to see you again, Em.
Thanks for checking out this episode. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single one. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Our handle is @wheelchairnerds. And tell your friends about our podcast too. Oh, and we really appreciate it if you give us a 5-star rating and leave a comment sharing what your favorite thing about Wheelchair Nerds is. Last but not least, if you have a topic you'd like us to discuss or know a great guest, hey, it could even be you. You could be that next great guest. Send us an email. Tell us why. You can reach us at wheelchairnerds@permobile.com or DM us on one of our social platforms. We love hearing from you. Along with the wheelchair nerds, the wheelchair nerds, the wheelchair nerds.